What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Movie. I'm your host, as always, Josh Bergman, and today I have my co-host, Jeff Bergman. Jeff, how you doing?
Howdy there, neighbor.
Dad, I'm excited to have you on today, and I have a big question. Are you ready to laugh?
I'm always ready to laugh.
Perfect, because we are talking about a brand new comedy, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. In addition to that, we are going to be ranking our top 10 SNL cast member comedies. You ready for this?
So ready.
And we might be having a guest appearance from a very special person. But before we go into that, Dad, we actually have some news to talk about. I feel like it's been a while since we've had some actual movie news. But to start off, Dad, the big entity in entertainment that we cannot not talk about is Marvel. It is the basis of every conversation. And there was some Marvel news this week. Now, one of the franchises, Spider-Man, the third movie is coming out this year in 2021. It will be the fourth Marvel movie to come out in 2021 if the schedule holds up. Now, the title, Spider-Man 3, has been titleless until this week. Now, if you remember, the first movie in the Tom Holland Spider-Man trilogy was Spider-Man Homecoming. The second one is Far From Home, and I can confirm that the third one does have a home use in it. Have you heard of the title yet?
Can I guess?
Sure, you can guess.
Spider-Man Home Alone.
I think for legal reasons, they cannot use that.
Spider-Man Home is Where the Heart Is.
No. But, so if we look back at the end of Far From Home, not to spoil anything, but Tom Holland's Peter Parker, Spider-Man, may have to flee home because of some revelations about him. So if that gives you any hint of where the title can go. Third guess.
Okay. Escape from Home in Louisiana.
No. I'm just going to say it. It is Spider-Man No Way Home, which does make sense based on the ending of Spider-Man Far From Home. And I'm just excited for what it's going to bring with potentially Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield coming back as their Spider-Man and doing a multiverse thing, which I'm excited about. As of now, it is in December of 2021, only in theaters, they emphasized.
Excellent.
You excited?
I'm excited because I think we'll be fully back to normal. Pretty much back to normal by December 2021.
Hopefully. But do you think there's too much Marvel in 2021? No. Because we have WandaVision, which we're almost done with. Then we have Falcon and the Winter Soldier a week after WandaVision. Then hopefully Black Widow on May 7th. Then it was just announced that Loki, his spinoff TV show, is going to be released in June. Then in July, you have Shang-Chi, brand new superhero that's being introduced. And then in November, you have The Eternals, the Chloe Zhao who did Nomadland. You got Angelina Jolie, Kumail Nanjiani. That's in November. And then a month later, you got Spider-Man. 7 Marvel products in 1 year. I think that's crazy.
And I gotta make up for lost time, man.
That is true. But going into your point of hopefully things will get back to normal, some big movie news in regards to the pandemic and how theaters are recovering. For the first time in almost a year, New York City theaters will be opening on March 5th. AMC theaters and all theaters except Regal with reserved seating are gonna be opening in New York City at either 25% capacity or 50% people max in the theater. What do you think of this?
Well, I'm just wondering whether the cool independent theaters in New York are going to open, like the Angelica and the one we went to that was on Canal Street.
I think that actually closed.
That one closed.
That closed like a couple
years
ago.
Or the one in the Village that we went to.
All right, you just keep saying the one we went to. The one that we saw Don't Think Twice at, that closed.
Okay.
I don't know which ones you're talking
about.
We went
the one on 6th Avenue in the Village we went to last, I forgot what we saw there. Mom and I went to see something. I forget.
I don't remember. But anyway, this is big news because this is just in time for Raya and the Last Dragon, the new Disney animated film, Chaos Walking, and then, of course, Godzilla vs. Kong.
What's Chaos Walking?
Oh, Chaos Walking is the long-delayed Tom Holland, Daisy Ridley, Nick Jonas, Cynthia Erivo film hyped for. Supposed to be bad, but we don't really know yet.
Well, now California has to step up because if Los Angeles opens up their theaters in all of LA County, then maybe, or I don't even know if Orange County's open or whatever, but if all the theaters in California start opening, then we can start cranking out some box office stuff.
Black Widow and Fast 9 may be safe. But to go into that, Regal, which they announced a couple months ago, they're going to close their theaters until movies start to really set their release dates. They said this is great for New York, but we will not reopen until Los Angeles reopens. So Regal is still dead silent. But AMC, which New York has, I don't know, 8 plus, 10 plus theaters, Lincoln Square, all of them going to be open. Empire 25, so I'm hyped about. And because of this news, the film Nobody, the Bob Odenkirk action movie, was set to release on April 2nd. It has now moved up 1 week to March 26th to get a jump start on Godzilla vs. Kong, jump start on the Easter weekend, and it's a very important weekend as well, March 26th.
It's your birthday!
It's my birthday weekend! Which, odds are, I'm gonna want to see it for my birthday. Just a heads up. And what do you feel about that? Is this a good sign? You excited now?
Everything's positive.
Hopefully it'll stay positive and nothing crazy happens. Now that we have the news of the week out of the way, Dad, it is time for the movie of the week, in which we are going to be discussing Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. This was sadly, though, a victim of the COVID pandemic, in which it was supposed to be released. It was released by Lionsgate, but it was going to be in theaters in July of 2020. Then it was pushed back a year to July of 2021 in theaters, and just in the end of January, they released a trailer saying, guess what? It's coming to premium video on demand for $20 anywhere you can rent movies. iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, you have it. Wherever you are, you can watch this movie in the comfort of your own home with your friends, family, or loved ones. And this is directed by Josh Greenbaum, directorial debut, and it is most importantly written by Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamolo, and also stars them, but Dad, this duo was the genius behind Bridesmaids. They wrote the film Bridesmaids. They were nominated for an Oscar for Bridesmaids. And pretty much in this movie, Kristen Wiig and Annie, they star as Barb and Star. They're two middle-aged women who live in the middle of the country. They're kind of in a rut in their lives, and so they decide to go into a vacation to Vista Del Mar. And wacky scenarios ensue, relationships start to flourish, and they may just interact or be involved in a more devilish scheme that's going on. But I don't want to spoil it, but what'd you think of this?
Well, I knew very little about it. I just knew that Kristen and Annie had both written Bridesmaids together, so I was expecting something similar to Bridesmaids. But to me, this was like, if like Seth Rogen and his buddies, you know, when they did like The End of the World, This Is the End.
This Is the End.
You know, where they just wrote around and they just like, or they were just thinking up ideas and just throwing them up on screen and stuff like that and doing whatever the hell they wanted because they had total unlimited control from the studio. This is what this was. But just from by two 40-something-year-old women.
Who are best friends in real life and are playing best friends in the movie.
Yeah, so they had free reign and it is, there are some really dumb things, but it's a stupid comedy in the vein of all the great stupid comedies of the 80s and 70s and stuff like that. But it's written by women. I mean, there aren't many, you know, maybe the Tina Fey, Amy Poehler movies are kind of like stupid female comedies, you know. Yeah. But I can't think of other like really silly female comedies.
Well, this is the thing. There's a certain style of comedy in this film that's like a surreal, zany, really anything goes, where I would say the most to a comedy film is most comparable to Anchorman, in my opinion, where people can break out into songs, there can be a talking animal, random jokes happen, there could be a whole fight scene where a bunch of celebrities and a minotaur and stuff like that, as an Anchorman, combined with the zaniness of the Muppets, where you can fly away with pants and mermaids and celebrity cameos and stuff like that. Though it's Anchorman combined with the Muppets in a female voice. And personally, I adore a lot of elements in this movie, but it's just, it's weird, as you said, because they do whatever they want. It's like, there is no groundedness in this film. This film is not grounded, but in that way, I love it. There's no lull of emotion. There's no, like, second act, like the friend's about to break up and the comedy stops. What'd you think? Did the comedy stop for you or did it keep on going?
No, I thought the comedy kept going. I mean, I think remembering you laughed at the movie more than I did.
I laughed so hard in this movie.
So like, you know, some of the stuff I thought was just too dumb to be funny. But if I was in a theater, I think laughing is sort of infectious in theaters.
Yes.
And I think we all would have laughed more if we were in the theater because you laugh when everybody else is laughing.
Well, certain elements I want to point out. So first off, did you think this was funny?
Somewhat funny.
Okay. Because, as I said, it was more surreal comedy where, so, just as I said before, there are celebrity cameos, random musical numbers, and even talking animals. But one of my favorite things is that, as you said, stupid comedy. I don't like that term, stupid comedy, because comedy, one, is really hard to do. Mm-hmm. It is subjective. There is more simpler comedy. I think, yes, there is simple comedy in this film, but there's a lot of smart comedy, such as, one of the characters that we didn't even mention, Jamie Dornan, who, as most people know from 50 Shades of Grey, he is in this film, and there's one scene where he goes on a date with Barb and Star two separate times, and he goes on one date with Barb, anything, it's a normal date, and then he goes on the date with Star later, and it's the same exact camera movements, the same kid holds the same size cotton candy, the transition between them going on a bridge to a boat is the exact same, and it's never addressed. It's for the audience to realize it's the exact same thing. I think that's hysterical, and that's what really shines in this movie, which I think, yes, there are some more in-your-face, like, a kid singing. Which, like, it's simple, but I think that type of comedy is stuff that I love and is chock full of in this film.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, that type of smart comedy, you know, like, when I would say the Tina Fey Mean Girls smart type of comedy where, like, there are smart lines and, you know, it's funny and at a higher level. Yeah, there was some of that here, and I think I laughed at those particular points in time. Maybe not enough for me, but...
So, one thing about Barb and Star is that they have unique voices. What would you say their accent was?
Well, they were trying to do a Midwestern Nebraska accent. Yeah. I don't know if... a little overblown, I would think. Maybe it was more close to a Chicago.
I thought it was like a North Dakota.
Yeah, they were doing like a little bit of a North Dakota, a little bit of a Chicago... somewhat of a Midwestern accent, but yeah, that was fine. I mean, you know.
Did it annoy you? Because I feel like I would the think voices if you're from, could annoy you.
If you're from that part of the country, you might be annoyed. But there wasn't enough Wendy McGlovin Covey. I was very upset.
That's true. She was a main character in Bridesmaids, and we have grown up with her 8 years now on the Goldbergs, and she was in, I think, just one scene.
One scene, right.
One scene. But of people who were in the movie, Jamie Dornan, who you have not seen the 50 Shades movies.
I have not seen
any
of
them. So what do you think of him as a comedy actor, potentially a singer in this film?
Yeah.
How do you think he did?
I'm surprised he took the role.
Yeah.
You know, because he kind of more of a serious dramatic actor, and maybe he just thought it'd be a good change of pace to do some comedy. And he could be like a Leslie Nielsen, maybe a straight, good-looking straight man in a comedy type of thing going forward. I don't know. But he was good. He had some good acting comedy chops. So
I was really surprised with his acting ability, for the comedic abilities in this film, especially given some of his acting abilities in 50 Shades. But I don't think that was the actor's fault. I think that was something more. Another part of this movie, Damon Wayans Jr., who most people know him as Coach in New Girl, he was the person brought on to whatever's going on in Vista Del Mar. Personally, for me, he was the weakest part of the comedy in this movie, mainly because his one joke was the same joke overall, but mm-hmm. I'll still say I laughed every single time, but I do think it was the weakest part.
Yeah, maybe his character wasn't fleshed out, or what he was doing, or his comedy, his lines weren't as good as, you're right.
Do you wish that the movie had a bit more groundedness? Like, do you wish it had more emotion? Because the characters technically do have an emotional arc and a character arc. It's just not strong.
No.
You thought it was perfect. You liked the craziness.
Zany, and they kept going zany, and they zanied until the end.
So one thing, as you did mention, you think it would have been nice to see this with a loud crowd in a theater.
Comedies always are better in theaters.
So would you have waited the 4 months? Because it was technically going to come out in July. Would you have waited till July to see this with mom on a date night on a Saturday night?
Sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But were you also fine paying the $20 at home?
Well, since there were... Five of us watching. Yes, I was fine with that.
I'm a big advocate for theaters. So I will say once again, like, the movie technically, it's not the most inspiring. It's not doing anything new. It does what it tries to achieve. So seeing in a theater, the audience, that energy is the only reason why I would really say I would have waited 4 or 5 months to see this in the theater.
Yeah, and especially opening weekend.
Oh, that would have been so much
fun. When the theaters are crowded.
And overall, who or what would you say was the star of the movie? What was the one thing that you took away of, like, this is great? Was it musical numbers? Was it zany villains or actors who play two roles? Potential spoilers.
No, I thought, yeah, I guess Kristen Wiig was the star of the movie because she played two roles. Maybe a little kudos to Andy Garcia playing, being in his cameo.
We're not going to spoil who it is, but that was a lovely surprise.
Yeah, I'd never really seen Andy on screen before. And so she was good. So I, you know, but like, she, you know, the two of them have done improv and stuff like that. So who's for me to say, you know, she's not a good actress or anything like that? It's just a question of whether she can hold a movie on screen, you know.
By herself, yeah. Without Kristen.
Yeah.
That was my biggest question. Like, if Kristen wasn't a part of this, how well could Annie have done? I'm not too sure. I do think Kristen, out of like the two of them, the duo, she has more just like a better comedic presence. But for me, the star of the film, I would say, is comedies. Because watching this film, I have, as you were kind of mentioning, how I laughed the hardest. I don't think I laughed this hard in a film. I know Borat came out this year, but I actually just rewatched it. And I thought it doesn't hold up as well on your own a second time. But like, this style of comedy will last a long time for me. And I don't think I really laughed this hard since the duo release of Game Night and Blockers in 2018. 3 years. This film, I think...
Wow, you haven't laughed that much in 3 years, Josh.
I probably
have. Sad.
But, like, I can't think of a big movie that's been released where I am laughing out loud, wanting
Sherlock
to
Holmes?
Rewatch it.
I mean, Holmes and Watson?
I laugh for different reasons, but it's a different greatness of comedy in that. But even with Game Night and Blockers, one thing that I think holds them down a little bit is that there's an emotional story, or, like, you really have to bond with the characters in some sense, which I, in a good way... This movie, Barb and Star, does not have that emotional, more dramatic weight, which I just want to say again, I appreciate it.
So do you think that if Melissa McCarthy, do you think that she could have been playing the Annie Momolo role?
No, I would say that Melissa McCarthy, she does like a bit over-the-top job when this one you have to be hidden. Like, this is you. This is your character. And I think Annie, because she would do this character with Kristen, apparently, during the making of Bridesmaids,
right.
Like on offset, they would just do these random voices.
Right.
And because of that, I think you cannot recast it. It is these characters.
That's true.
And yeah, I just think comedies, it really showcases how important we need to laugh, how much we need to laugh with each other. And I'll say it again. Seeing this in a theater would have been maybe in a way life-changing. I would have said this is one of the best experiences that I've had all summer, but I can't.
No.
And now, Dad.
So sad.
So sad. But now, Dad, the final question. What would you give this on the nut ranking?
My nut ranking was...
Almond, cashew.
Cashew. I'd give it a cashew. Oh. I was not...
Cashew is above walnut. I forgot walnut.
I would say give it a walnut then.
You were negative.
I was a... I was not... Because as much as you were laughing, I was not laughing so much.
I didn't infect you?
No. So I definitely give it a... Yeah. The second level
wow.
two.
Wow. Walnut. Okay.
Sorry.
I'm a little bit heartbroken because it's hard here because, as I said, it's not technically inspiring. It doesn't try to reinvent the wheel. So it, like, compared to something that really does something great, it's a cashew. But whenever I'm looking at a movie, I do question, does this achieve what it's trying to do? This movie does go all out. This movie does make you laugh, what I think is consistently for the hour 40, which I think didn't feel too long, didn't feel that short. And I think that Kristen Wiig and Annie, the two of them really put their heart and soul into this for a PG-13 comedy. That, like, a great PG-13 comedy, I don't think comes by a lot recently. So I know I just gave it to Judas, but I'm going to give this a peanut.
Wow.
I know. I think this achieves whatever it wants to do.
Shocker.
I know, but... I love this film. I highly recommend. It's worth it for the $20.
They went to do whatever they wanted to do, and they did it. And they took as many liberties as they wanted to do. And
for better, for worse.
For better, for worse. But you know, go enjoy, people.
All righty. Now that we have that out of the way, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar is on premium video on demand wherever you rent movies digitally. But now, Dad, because Kristen Wiig, who was on Saturday Night Live, was in this film, I thought it was the perfect time to do a list of the top 10 Saturday Night Live cast member comedies. Now, this is a list consisting of films that star someone who is on Saturday Night Live in a comedy that is not SNL related. So no Wayne's World, no MacGruber, no Blues Brothers. It has to be an original movie, not based on a pre-existing SNL character. What'd you think of this list, getting everyone together?
Yeah, a few more rules. Number one, I would not pick a cast member who's only on for one season.
I do not have that rule.
So Robert Downey Jr., Sarah Silverman, Anthony Michael Hall, no go.
Others for me, one movie per cast member. One of my favorite actors, Will Ferrell, I only chose one for him.
One? Well, I did not do that.
That is okay.
I tried to, but I didn't. Because some people, there are a few movies where people, a group of people were in together,
yeah.
And so maybe they weren't the star, but they were in the movie.
Yeah. And for me, it's mainly it has to be the true star of the film, or if it's two SNL cast members, they can be a duo star. And I believe that's all of my rules. Do you have any other else? And also no repeats or try to avoid repeats,
yes.
Alrighty, now that we have that out of the way, what is your number 10 SNL cast member comedy?
All right, my number 10 SNL cast member comedy is Fletch.
Fletch
stars from 1985, directed by Michael Ritchie, starring Chevy Chase, who was in the original cast. You know, Chevy Chase had a lot of movies I could have chose from, but Vacation was okay. I was always a little disappointed with Vacation and the two sequels. But Fletch was a really funny, clever movie about a detective, like a silly detective who has many disguises and things of that nature. And I just always remember really enjoying that movie. And so it is my number 10.
Awesome. I've not heard of that film at all. Would you say, before we move on, do you think there's going to be an age difference? Because you were very much old SNL.
I tried to. I know what are your favorite movies. So I tried to pick movies that would not show up on your list.
Awesome. And yeah, I would say, I'll just admit, I am more of a newer SNL, at least with my cast members. So I do hold closer some of the more newer films. For me at number 10, I got Sisters. This is the duo performance of Tina Fey as well as Amy Poehler. And also it stars Maya Rudolph, Bobby Moynihan, Rachel Dratch, other SNL cast members. And pretty much the movie's about two adult sisters. They go back to their parents' house one last time before they move, and they host a party with all of their high school friends or people from high school. One last ride. It's fun. You feel like you're with your friends because you love the actresses, and it feels like getting together for a party. There's some good gags. I do think it goes on a bit too long. There's some annoying storylines with Tina Fey, and also watching the movie and seeing the party go wrong. It brings back stress of having to host some of the parties for my fraternity, and that really ticks me off. I enjoy it to an extent. 87 million domestically, 106 million worldwide. My number 10, Sisters.
Actually, I have to say, the two Amy Poehler, Tina Fey movies,
Baby Mama and Sisters,
I feel both were disappointing in a way. You know, I mean, Mean Girls is such a top level comedy that Tina wrote, and you expect everything she does is at that level. And so,
because she only wrote Mean Girls. She never wrote Baby Mama. She never wrote Sisters. So that's why it doesn't have that Tina Fey, that 30 Rock, or Mr. Mayor, if you're watching that show, that flavor.
Right.
But that's number 10, Sisters.
All right. So on to my number 9. My number 9 is Head of State, which is the Chris Rock movie about where he ends up like he's an alderman in Chicago, or I think he's an alderman. And somehow he gets on the track as a goof candidate running for president.
That could never happen today.
I love Chris Rock. I think he's so, so funny. And I don't think he's really had, I mean, he's had like animated movies that he's voiced in, like
Madagascar
and
movie
and the one Osmosis Jones. But I really liked this movie. I just felt like he really had creative control over it, and his comedy was in it all over the place, and it was really funny.
I've not seen that one, but I will, looking back at Chris Rock, I don't think he does really have a big starring movie. I think he's in one Tyler Perry movie as the star.
Oh.
But beyond that, he's usually in an Adam Sandler movie or
right.
Madagascar.
Yeah,
films.
You know, like Grown Ups and stuff like that, which, you know, I didn't go near. But so he directed it and he wrote it. So he really had full. I really like it. Definitely a good laugh.
Maybe I'll check that out. Up for me at number 9, I got The King of Staten Island. This is the film came out over the pandemic. This stars Pete Davidson as his first real starring role. It is directed by Judd Apatow. Love Judd Apatow. I just think it's a very well-acted film from Pete, Marissa Tomei, Bill Burr, Maude Apatow, and it does have some great comedy elements in it. And what I really like about this one is that it is a bit more drama than some other comedies on this list, and it does make you feel for Pete, his character, as well as the person as well, because it is semi-autobiographical. And yeah, it's not perfect. I think the movie's way too long, and it is a bit too melodramatic, but I personally enjoy it heavily more towards just appreciating Pete Davidson as a person. Domestically, it was not released in theaters, but it was estimated to gross $40 million on video on demand. At the time, it was released for $20 on premium video on demand, so whatever $40 million divided by 20 is, that's how many people watched it. And worldwide, it grossed $1.7 million worldwide. My number 9, King of Staten Island.
Yeah, I think we Did we review Kingsman?
No, we didn't review it.
Yeah, no, I'm...
We've talked about it.
Yeah, like, you know, typical Apatow movie, too long. But it was enjoyable. There were some good bits in it, especially if you're a New Yorker, you know, had a touch the heart a little bit. But I enjoyed the movie. And I think this year on SNL, I think he's been better than he's ever been.
He really has. He's also been in more... Been more confident.
Yeah, and he's doing a lot of impressions, which he never did before. Like this Andrew Cuomo was hilarious this past weekend. All right, so my number 8 movie. Wow, this is really hard. I really had a hard time with this list. There's so many movies. I'm going to go with City Slickers. Now, you know, Billy Crystal was originally an actor on soap in the 70s, and then he went back to SNL with Martin Short. He was really brought back because the cast after Bill Murray left was really bad, and they had to save the show. So they brought in Martin Short and Billy Crystal, who were older, and they did a couple years on SNL. So I had to pick my favorite Billy Crystal movie, which, you know, where he stars in, and so I'm going with City Slickers, with him and Daniel Stern, about two New Yorkers who go on a... country roundup type vacation, and they encounter Jack Palance, who's their guide, I guess, and it's just kind of a fish out of water type of thing. So definitely a movie to see if you haven't seen it. Really funny. City Slickers.
I remember your parents once made me watch it a couple years ago, and I was young, very young. I fell asleep, never went back to rewatch it. Oh well. Up for me at number 8, we got Zoolander. Because if you have forgotten, Ben Stiller was on one season of Saturday Night Live.
Well, you can also include Will Ferrell on that because, he was the villain. And
it's mainly Ben Stiller, though.
But
yeah, anyway, yes, as you said, one season doesn't really count for me. I'm including on my list, he was in one season, 1989. This is a funny, wacky story with male models and assassinations. And it kind of is in the realm of Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, in which random stuff happens with random orgies and gas fights and celebrity cameos. It doesn't go to as zany or random as Barb and Star, but I really enjoy it. Ben Stiller, Zoolander, The Blue Steel, somewhat iconic. On rewatch, I'll admit, it was not as funny as I remember, but I personally will always enjoy it. 45.1 million domestically, 60.7 million worldwide. My number 8, Zoolander.
I came to Zoolander late. I didn't really see it when it first came out, so I wasn't really like into the whole Zoolander thing like other people. If I had to pick a Ben Stiller, I mean, Dodgeball.
He's not really the star. That's like Vince Vaughn.
No, I know it's Vince Vaughn, and really, he's not really the star. Or Night at the Museum. Those are my kind of my favorite. And
or if you want to double up, you could do Tropic Thunder, which also has Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
The 2-1 season people from
SNL.
Yes,
Tropic Thunder is the best, and I've already mentioned in a previous episode, so we will not go there.
All right, what do you got for number 7?
My number 7, I'm going to go with Austin Powers, but Goldmember.
Okay.
You know, I know we've maybe mentioned the Austin Powers before. I know you have.
We've talked about the other two. Neither of us have mentioned Goldmember yet.
Yeah, so of the 3 Austin Power movies, obviously the first one is the original. The second one, like you said last week, it introduced a lot of great characters. But Goldmember, I just remember seeing that in the movie theater and laughing hysterically. Like, the opening scene I was cracking up at. You know, and like most of these like movies, maybe after a while, it gets old, or the comedy, you know, you get used to it, and then it's not as funny in the second half as in the first half. But the beginning part of Goldmember, I mean, hysterically laughing, where I couldn't breathe hysterically laughing. So that's why I'm going, that is my number 7.
Great film. I grew up on that one. I was going to pick Goldmember, but I thought, you know, we've talked about Austin Powers a lot. We even just talked about it last week, or I did. So I might be choosing a different Mike Myers film later on. But still, great choice, favorite of the trilogy. Up for me at number 7, we got We're the Millers. This is using Jason Sudeikis. He is pretty much this drug dealer who, after getting into some shenanigans, has to go pick up a bunch of weed in Mexico and bring it back into the States. And to get away through... And to get through the border, he decides to make up a fake family with Jennifer Aniston as his wife, who's really a stripper, a homeless daughter played by Emma Roberts, and just a weird loner kid played by Will Poulter. I really love this concept. You also got in the cast Nick Offerman and Catherine Hahn, who's on a big hype right now because of WandaVision. And as I said, I love the concept. I think it's very funny. I will say it's not consistently funny. But seeing this in a theater, it was great. I think there are a lot of great gags, whether it's the waterfall scene or them pretending a bag of weed's a fake baby and getting run over by a truck, or even Will Poulter, who's never kissed a girl, is practicing kissing with his supposedly sister, Emma Roberts, and his mom, Jennifer Aniston, and then someone walking in on him, being freaked out that he's kissing both his mom and sister. I die laughing at that scene. I really enjoy We're the Millers to an extent, so it's on my list. $150 million domestically, $268 million worldwide. A big surprise in summer 2013.
Really like this movie. Really well done. Very clever. And Jennifer Aniston's great. I think her and Jason are great. They work really well together on screen.
They were in Horrible Bosses together.
Yeah, and the kids were really funny too. Just a really, really... Who directed? Who wrote? And
the director was Rawson Marshall Thurber, who I believe did Dodgeball.
Oh.
He did Dodgeball, Central Intelligence, and Skyscraper. The Dwayne Rock when he's in the building.
He directed a series? Wow, yeah. You should stick to comedies. He's really good. Well, my number six, and again, I'm trying to not duplicate actors, so I'm going to go number six is Fever Pitch, the Jimmy Fallon, Drew Barrymore movie. And I really like that movie. You know, it's a sports movie. I know it involves Boston, and I don't like anything. You know, I don't like the Patriots and stuff like that. I'm a Mets fan, so I really don't care about the Yankees, about the Red Sox. But I just really like this movie. It's like one of these movies I can watch over and over again. I just think the two of them together are great. I think the story is really, you know, funny, right up my alley.
As someone who owned season tickets before, you could relate.
Yes, like when the season tickets arrive and it's like a special day and like they open it up very slowly and they breathe in the air of the tickets. I get all that stuff. And the ending... You know, so the weird thing about it was, so they decided to make the movie, and, you know, all these years, the Red Sox have never won the World Series and never won the World Series, and the one year they decided to make the movie, the Red Sox, they incorporated the whole 2004 playoffs, where the Yankees were up 3-0 on the Red Sox, and the Red Sox won four straight games to win the ALCS and won the World Series, and they incorporated that whole storyline into the movie. Like, I don't know, what would they have done differently?
I think the original story was that they were going to lose the World Series, and... probably the same stuff happens because they were filming it at Fenway Park.
Yeah, no, I think the movie was going to end. So where she runs out of the, she runs on to the field and then like she tells him, don't sell the tickets. This is, you know, whatever. And I think the movie was just going to end there because really what happened in the movie was, and then the whole narration came after that where they said, and you know what happens next, you know? So yeah. I think it was pretty fascinating that it happened that way.
I remember watching this movie a couple years back. It's fine. I'm not a big Jimmy Fallon fan, at least now on Late Show. It's a very sweet movie. I do like the ending when they run on the field.
I think Drew Barrymore is really good in it, too.
All right, up for me at number six, I got Bridesmaids. This is Kristen Wiig. This was the original from Barb and Star co-writers. This one is mainly Kristen Wiig, but also Maya Rudolph as the SNL cast member. And also in the cast, you got Ellie Kemper, Rose Byrne with amazing, hilarious acting chops, John Hamm, and of course, Melissa McCarthy. And really, this film showed us that women can be raunchy and hilarious. Because if you think about it, in 2011, before this movie, they didn't do a Hangover-type movie for women. Really, this movie was hugely impactful, very influential. It started the directing career for Paul Feig, who then did The Heat, Spy with Melissa McCarthy. But I think there's so many iconic funny scenes. Of course, the diarrhea, food poisoning scene at the wedding dress, and of course, the airplane scene. I'll say it goes on a bit too long, which has a more emotional lull that makes it not as fun for the entire time. But really... classic. $169 million domestically, $289 million worldwide. My number six, Bridesmaids.
I knew you were going to put it on, so that's why I did not. I mean, I like Bridesmaids. I don't love it to the point where, like it's so memorable to me that I'm emotionally attached to it.
I wouldn't say I am, but...
It was good. It was good. I mean, that's why the two of them got to do this movie. Kudos to them.
Well, Dad, we are now halfway through our list, so I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break. So we're going to be taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor, Anchor, and then we'll get right back to the list. Welcome back from the break, everyone. I am here with Jeff. We just reviewed Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, and we are currently in our top 10 SNL cast member comedies. We are at number 5. Dad, what do you have?
Well, I've come up with number 5, a movie that's very close to my heart.
Yeah.
And that is the 2005 Will Ferrell soccer movie Kicking and Screaming.
Of course, it is a classic.
Directed by the classic director Jesse Dillon, Bob Dillon's son. Which I don't think he's...
Wait, really? It's his son?
Yeah. I don't think he's done anything since then, right?
I don't know. But, Dad, why is this movie so significant?
Well, because One of the stars, I guess you can call stars, or one of the cast members, is here with us.
That's right. We have one of the stars, Hunter, number 9 on the field, Jeremy Bergman. He is one of the kids from Kicking and Screaming, and he has come back 16 years later to be on the show. How you doing, Jeremy?
Oh, thanks for having me. It's really an honor. This has always been a dream of mine.
And for audiences, we have mentioned Jeremy a lot of saying, when will he be on the show? He has come back from Los Angeles, living in the Bergman household, and this is your introduction to the show. Welcome to Mr. Movie.
Thank you. Again, it's an honor. I flew back really just for this. And, you know, I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. Just want to contribute as much as I can to this esteemed podcast.
Appreciate it.
So, Jeremy, I'm assuming over the years, you know, you've gotten a lot of people ask you questions about the filming of the movie.
Yes, not usually on a podcast. So,
I know it took place in the spring of 2004. What are some of your fond recollections? What are some of the fond memories you have of filming?
Well, the fact that I got to be out of school for pretty much an entire season from January to April was nice. You know, we all lived in a bungalow kind of community in Studio City, California. I was, you know, living with my mom for a couple of the months, and you, Jeff Bergman, fellow podcaster, for a couple of the months. And I just remember it being a really fun time to meet, you know, Will Ferrell, Robert Duvall, Mike Ditka, who I knew from Sunday NFL Countdown, not really from his days as a coach of the 85 Bears. It felt like I was really on a Hollywood set. And, you know, just basic memories like that.
Josh, do you remember, like, going out, and what do you remember from that time?
I remember going to Shrek 4D at Universal Studios a lot, and there was one time I almost ran on set, and you grabbed me and said, don't go, and you pulled me back. And I would stand at the fence, right at the cliff, where I can see the Universal Studios tour tram going to the Mummy, and I'd wave at the people.
Yeah, we spent a weird amount of time at Universal Studios.
Well, we filmed on Universal.
It was on the Universal set, but it wasn't on the set that you see when you go on the studio tour. It was in what is now, I think, the Roadrunner parking lot. Like, they converted it into a field. They laid down the sod. They made it look like, you know, middle of nowhere Illinois. But now it's a parking lot. And so, but we did spend a lot of time on the City Walk. There was a Raiders store that we used to go to a lot, a UCLA store. And then, you know, we would go on the Jaws ride a bunch. It was a fun time.
Rest in peace, the soccer field. What else, Dad, do you love about the film?
Well, you know, it was interesting because I was listening to the Mike Greenberg podcast, and he had done a list of the top athletes who performed in a movie. And Mike Ditka was his number 3 for Kicking and Screaming, because growing up, him and his kids would watch Kicking and Screaming together, which very few people put it on any list, but, you know.
It's on this list.
It's on this one.
Ditka was an interesting guy. You know, his acting chops were, you know, pretty one note. I mean, it was pretty much, you know, very aggressive. It smelled of cigars. But, you know, we had a good time talking about how bad the Jets were in 2003 going into 2004. Mm-hmm. They were like a 6-10 team. He would rag on me about the Jets. So I guess he's up there as one of the top athletes to be in a movie.
But, you know, speaking of Judd Apatow, so Judd Apatow was the
executive producer of Kicking and Screaming. Not a lot of people know that.
He was on the set a lot.
Well, yeah, because they don't talk about it because it wasn't one of his more, let's say, successful films.
But it was one of his better films. We cannot forget how great this movie is.
I just remember this one scene that was cut out of the movie. It was a dream sequence that was done at night, and you had to sit on top of, like, the roof of a building or something.
Yes, I remember with that. Byung Sun.
Yeah.
Elliot Cho. Yeah. Love that kid.
Bing Bong.
Well, that was his name in the movie. I don't think we would call him that today. A lot of things have changed.
So my number 5 movie, Kicking and Screaming, very underrated. I have to say, a very underrated Will Ferrell movie. It is very funny.
I will
agree.
And
for families, it's a really... there's nothing bad in it, really.
It's pretty clean.
PG. It's fun. It's fun for the family. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us on this episode.
Thanks, guys.
Hope you had a blast. Hope you tune in.
Let him stay.
Do you want to stay?
Let's stay.
I have nothing to do.
All righty, you're staying for the show. Up for me at number 5, I got National Lampoon's Vacation for Chevy Chase. It's a classic family road trip comedy. I love seeing things go wrong when they get to each stop, whether it's something with the grandma or something with the dog. It's been a long time since I've seen this film, but it's my favorite of the original Chevy Chase Vacation movies. And
you don't like the Ed Helms reboot?
I do like I actually do really enjoy the Ed Helms one, like more of Vegas Vacation, Christmas, European. This one's my favorite of those 4. Only domestically, $61.4 million domestically. Not released worldwide. Number 5, National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh, I remember being a little disappointed with the movie when I saw it.
Back in 83?
Because it was National Lampoon, so they had done Animal House. And so everything that had National Lampoon on it, I thought it was going to be really funny. And nothing compared to Animal House, so.
Jeremy, our bystander, have you seen Vacation?
I have seen Vacation, but it doesn't, you know, it's not very memorable to me as a, you know, just a mid-80s, I'm guessing mid-80s comedy. Chevy Chase's reputation for my generation is that of the cranky, cantankerous guy on Community.
That's true.
And he's not well regarded by many of those comedians of that generation. So I prefer Chevy Chase as Fletch. And I'll leave it at that.
All right, Dad, what do you now have at number four?
Well, my number four is a tough one to choose from. I could go traditional or I could go new, but I'm going to go...
This one's tough.
Yeah, I'm going to go traditional. Number four is Coming to America, which is the Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall movie, which they conveniently have done a sequel and it is coming out
next week.
Yes. You know, of all the Eddie Murphy movies, you know, 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop.
Norbit
wasn't. Or all the... the Nutty Professor type movies.
You're leaving out Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle.
Classic.
I thought Coming to America was the funniest of all of them. Just, you know, again, a fish out of water type story. But I was going to do Dolomite is my name.
Oh, yeah.
Because Dolomite, I think, was a really underrated, really good movie.
But it's not.
Did you see Dolomite?
A comedy.
Yeah, Dolomite is my name kind of went under the radar last year. I thought Eddie Murphy was going to get a lot more awards pub. I think he was nominated for a Golden Globe.
He should have been nominated for all the Best Actor categories because I loved him in that. He did get nominated for Best Actor in a Comedy, though.
You know, it was like Eddie Murphy's comeback film, and I guess he parlayed that into the sequel of Coming to America. But
which is Coming to America. The same title as Coming to America, but now it's Coming to America.
The second America, yes.
So Coming to America, obviously, is directed by John Landis, who is... one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, you made me watch this film, and I did lose interest halfway through, but I was way too young to appreciate it. Since the sequel's coming out, I would be 100% down for attempting to rewatch it. Up for me at number four, this one's a bit of a weird choice, but it still counts, and it's Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Because of
you
Bill
went
Hader.
Animated?
I did go animated. There was no rules that you couldn't do animated.
I did not do animated. There were so many other animated movies I could have chose from.
Yeah.
Eight Crazy Nights. Or
you wouldn't have chose Eight Crazy Nights.
Or something like that.
Anyway, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs stars Bill Hader, who's great on SNL, also stars Anna Faris, Neil Patrick Harris, Will Forte, and Andy Samberg, two other SNL alums. It's more for the film itself than actually as an SNL performance star, but it is the directorial debut for Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who eventually gave us 21 and 22 Jump Street, the Lego movie. This one as well. It's a great film. It did take me forever to rewatch it because I just thought it is a generic kids movie. I love the humor. It is exactly Phil Lord and Chris Miller type of humor. Very rewatchable. Very much of like hidden in the corner type humor, which I just love. The imagination, the style, and this film has nut allergy awareness, which I'm always a fan of. 124.8 million domestically, 236.8 worldwide. My number four, Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs.
Didn't see it. Can't say much about it.
Fan of meatballs in my spaghetti, am I right? Not falling from the sky.
You are right, Jeremy. You are right. All right, Dad, number three.
My number three. Now, I probably have mentioned this before. I'm not sure if I have, but I'm going to go with Stripes.
I forget if you mentioned that one.
From 1981, I believe. Starring Bill Murray and Harold Ramis, who wrote Animal House. And Stripes is just one of my favorite stupid funny movies from my childhood, directed by Ivan Reitman, who ended up doing Ghostbusters after that. Again, a little bit of a fish out of water, like a slacker guy and his friend join the army to get away from a bad thing that they've done, and just how they, you know, adapt with the rules of the army and how they bring their zaniest to their crew with John Candy. So anyway, Stripes, my number three.
Yeah, as I said, I've not seen this one. Jeremy, have you seen Stripes?
Yeah, there are maybe like six DVDs that used to be in our massive DVD collection of movies that looked like films from Dad's past that I wasn't allowed to watch until a certain age, and Stripes was one of them. I have seen it, not as memorable as Animal House or other films.
Sorry, Dad. Up for me at number three, still in animation, I'm going Shrek. This is my Mike Myers choice, as well as Eddie Murphy. This film, if you believe it or not, is about to be 20 years old this May. I think that is aged phenomenally. The humor, Most of the animation still holds up pretty well. At the time of release, it was a great, innovative satire of the Disney fairy tale that really no one has really attempted to poke fun of. Loved it as a kid. It is now extremely iconic with 3 sequels, 1 apparently still in production, and a ton of memes online. And I'll still watch it to this day if the ending's on. I'll watch Shrek. I love Donkey with Eddie Murphy. I love Shrek. Cameron Diaz as Fiona. 267 million domestically, 492 million worldwide. My number 3, Shrek.
Great comedy. Very clever, I thought. You know, very well written. And again, a great, like, anti-Disney type of comedy. It was one of the first computer animated movies not from Pixar. Right?
It won the first ever Best Animated Film at the Oscars.
DreamWorks, right?
DreamWorks, yeah.
So kudos to them for catching up so quickly. Jeremy, where do you think Shrek ranks in the animated comedy universe?
Because you were, what, 9 when this came out?
Yeah, this was absolutely in my wheelhouse at that age. You could tell that it was different than the Disney movies that had come out in the 90s that I had grown up watching. Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, those had a different feel to them, very sincere, and Shrek was offbeat. The jokes, the accents were funny. They knew they were poking fun at the entire genre. The music was funny.
Great music.
Lord Farquaad was like Stewie before Stewie. Shrek is definitely a memorable film. People seem to like the sequels. Shrek is the only one that should be remembered in my book.
A lot of people like Shrek 2 on a rewatch. I really like Shrek 2. I will say the 3rd one, definitely not good. And the 4th is okay for me. But it did turn into a musical. And as I said, there's apparently a 5th film coming out.
Wow. Well, Mike Myers needs the money, man.
Yes,
when was the last time he was in something?
He's got all those Uber Eats commercials.
I know.
Dana Carvey.
Yeah, and he does.
All right, Dad. Number 2. We're getting
all right.
Close.
So number 2, lucky you're here for this one. So number 2 was Old School. Now, I know you might think it's a Vince Vaughn, Luke Wilson type thing, but Will Ferrell's Frank the Tank is a classic character in this movie. And interesting, so I saw this movie, so Jeremy was on Broadway for 6 months in Beauty and the Beast. And so he was playing the teacup, Chip, and there was another kid, Adam Kasner, who was the other teacup, and they would each go on 4 nights. There's 8 shows a week, so each would go on and do 4 nights each. So myself and Adam's dad would have nothing to do, and sometimes we'd hang out together. So one night, we went to see Old School together.
Aww.
You know, at a movie theater, because, you know, the show was in Times Square. So we just hopped over to the AMC, and we saw this together. And just, again, one of those movies where I laughed, like, out loud, really hysterically. And, like, memorably that I was laughing so much. Like, similar to Goldmember. Just,
yeah.
That was one of those great, you know, hysterical movies. Everything about this movie is hilarious. All the characters are funny. Who wrote? I have to look it up. Who wrote? Oh, it was Todd Phillips.
Oh, yeah. Todd Phillips directed it.
From
did he
Hangover.
Write it, too?
Oh, yeah. He did write it. Mm. Yeah. So it was written by Todd Phillips from the Hangover fame. And this is, like, his pre-Hangover movie.
Yeah.
And you could see, you know, he does comedy really well. So my number 2... Old School.
As we mentioned a lot on the show, I love Will Ferrell, one of my favorite comedians. I've not seen Old School, and in a weird way, I like to keep it that way, because I like to think that there's always something more, in that if I ever need to, I can experience it, but I like to just not be complete with it.
That,
you know?
I don't see how that is a rational line of thought. Old School is a film before the film I think you're going to get to that kind of put Will Ferrell in the conversation as a potential movie star. The lead of the movie is Vince Vaughn and Luke Wilson. It's centered around their relationships with their wives, Will Ferrell kind of being the third guy, but he totally takes over the movie as Frank the Tank. And so if you're going to understand film history of Will Ferrell, you have to include Old School.
I mean, I've seen Holmes and Watson. I understand all of Will Ferrell. Come on.
Right.
I know him.
And Bewitched.
And Bewitched.
Bewitched is your number one, right?
I like Bewitched. I don't know.
That's enjoyable.
I mean, I guess we'll have to do a Will Ferrell list one day when he comes out with his next movie. And at that time, we can rank his movies.
One day. All right. Up for me at number 2, I got Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stoppin'.
I knew you were going to pick that movie.
I think this is one of the most overlooked comedy of the 2010s. Mainly it's Andy Samberg, but it also has Chris Redd before he was even on SNL. And it's Lonely Island. They wrote it. They directed it. Their album, which they've come up with a bunch of albums. The album for this movie I have on CD. It's a bunch of parody songs, but in a strange way, it still rocks. Pretty much this is a mockumentary that is a parody or satire of 2010 singers such as Macklemore and Justin Bieber. Great celebrity cameo singers, everyone from DJ Khaled, Usher, even to Emma Stone as a fake singer in the film. As I said, great soundtrack. The songs, they're bangers. I think they're awesome. I will jam out to them. I will say even at 85 minutes, it does feel a bit long, mainly because of the mockumentary, documentary type style. But in certain groups, it's already deemed a cult classic. It grossed $9.4 million domestically, $9.5 million worldwide. Very disappointing. I saw this twice in theaters, and it grossed that low.
I can't believe it only did $100,000 the rest of the world.
I remember we saw this movie, I think, in Maplewood.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it since.
I just bought the Blu-ray. It's right over there.
Okay. Well, I will absolutely, definitely, probably not make time for that.
Fantastic.
While I'm here.
Yeah. You know, I like the Lonely Island guys. I think they're pretty funny. Like, when they haven't really done enough things for me, I think, right?
They directed, wrote, and starred in Hot Rod, the other Andy Samberg film. Yeah. And then one
this
of
was
them,
better.
I would say so. And then the other one of them directed MacGruber.
Oh.
And then they did this, Popstar, 2016, and they haven't done anything since.
But they've been, like, they've had cameos in certain things, right?
Yeah, they produce TV shows, they've cameoed and stuff, but right. nothing really big. Hmm. I'm waiting for their next album. All right, Dad, now before we get to our number one, what were some films that just didn't make your list?
Well, you know, some of the things we've talked about in the past, you know, all the Adam Sandler movies we didn't throw on there. Yep. The Wedding Singer, Happy Gilmore. Any of your favorite Adam Sandler movies?
You're missing Billy Madison there.
I mean,
But you're also, you know, what was the one with Sandler and Sandberg? You're My Boy?
That's My Boy.
That's My Boy?
That is double SNL.
Yeah, so some of the other honorable mentions, Caddyshack, but like that, it really wasn't starring. And Chevy Chase, but Chevy and Bill all had, they weren't the stars of the movie we talked about. This is Spinal Tap because Christopher Guest and Michael McKean were both on SNL for a couple years.
Did not know that.
So you can throw in all their movies, you know, all their mockumentary movies. Dolomite we talked about. And, you know, Jay Moore was on SNL for a year or two. And
Jay Moore?
Yeah, he was in Jerry Maguire. He played Bert Sugar.
I never saw Jerry Maguire.
Oh, man.
I have no idea what you're talking about. You sound outdated.
Replace me. No, you
complete me. Replace you.
You complete me.
I think that's a different ending to the story.
Yeah. And then, obviously, Trading Places, the Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd movie, which I liked, but I really didn't love it. And of course, Mean Girls, but I don't know, I thought Tina was, we've talked about Mean Girls on the list.
We talked about it.
But she didn't really have a starring role. I mean, really the girls are the stars of the movie. Though Miss Norberry is important, but she's not really a star. So that's my honorable mention.
For me, Goldmember, as you said before, I just want to move a bit away from Austin Powers and to give Shrek some love. Groundhog Day would have been my Bill Murray choice, but I've used that. Wedding Singer, my Adam Sandler choice, but we've used that. Emperor's New Groove for David Spade, I'm holding that for another list. And Skeleton Twins with Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader as twins. It's not that much of a comedy. It's very much more of a serious drama with some comedic moments. Ghostbusters, which I just think you got Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. The women Ghostbusters.
Oh, okay.
Which has three SNL cast members as the main stars.
You would have put that on your list instead of the original Ghostbusters, which features Bill Murray.
I mean, I didn't grow up on it,
but
also,
too.
True, two SNL cast members. But I don't know, I'm not, even that movie, both of them, I'm not huge on.
Right. You know, I do feel bad that I didn't have any female movies on my list. I mean, because really, but you think about it, I mean, other than Bridesmaids, I guess, and
Ghostbusters.
And the one you talked about.
Sisters?
Sisters. There really weren't, like, I don't think a lot of the women on SNL have really done. Gilda Radner never did anything big. Jane Curtin, Lorraine Newman never starred in anything. So
Molly Shannon had Superstar, didn't she?
Yeah,
but that's an SNL movie, and those don't count for this list.
Yeah, we can't.
Sorry, I missed the rules at the very beginning.
This is what happens when you come in halfway through the
list. You are the one who invited me down to this basement.
You didn't do any of the Farley movies.
Oh, right, because I've never seen Tommy Boy. And fun fact, Shrek, which was Mike Myers, was originally going to be Chris Farley before he died.
Oh, really?
But yeah, I was never saw the Chris Farley movies.
No Joe Dirt?
No Joe Dirt. I have no idea.
No,
really
what about the Rob Schneider movie where he's like
Hot Chick?
The Hot Chick.
He's not in that. He died before that. No, Rob Schneider.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Rob Schneider could have died before that. I mean, I haven't been following his career.
Did he put any of the grown-up movies in this thing?
No, no. I know there are a lot of SNL cast members, but yeah. These movies, we talked about grown-ups. I want to talk about some of the smaller movies, or movies we just haven't mentioned. So, and speaking of that, Dad, what is your number one?
Oh, anybody who knows me knows what my number one is.
I know what it is.
It's Animal House from 1978, directed by John Landis, starring John Belushi, or the movie that made him famous. And actually, he's the only SNL, but it's written by Harold Ramis, but he wasn't on SNL. But it's the only, Belushi's really the only SNL character in it. But it's just, you know, of all the Belushi movies, you know, there was Neighbors and Blues Brothers doesn't count. But obviously, of all the Belushi movies, this was his biggest, his best. Again, I saw this, in Pearl River, New York in 1978.
I was going to ask.
And I remember on the floor. I was on the floor during this movie cracking up. That's how funny it was. So it always holds near and dear to my heart. You know, one of the movies that I can quote lines from, me and my brother. So that is my number one, Animal House.
Did you see it with your family or with your friends?
I think I saw it with Bruce Mustachy.
Mustachy. Never heard of that person in your life.
He sounds like he's buried at Giant Stadium.
There were four of us. It was me, Andy Ratner, Doug Reinstein, and Bruce Mustachy. We were kind of, when we were younger, we were a little bit of a crew. Then we grew up, and, you know, as we got older, we kind of separated, but our families were all friends. So I think I saw it with Bruce.
Yeah, so Animal House, I saw the movie my freshman year of college. But I saw it, like, on my phone early in the mornings. I woke up too early, and I thought, this is a movie. I can understand why people loved it. I've not gone back to rewatch it since. I probably would appreciate it more now being gone all through college. But I definitely appreciate it. Just I don't think I was in the right mindset to watch it and enjoy it. What's your history, Jeremy, with Animal House?
With Animal House, well, my history is growing up knowing via Jeff and Scott that Animal House was the funniest freaking movie of all time. And I just, I know, I was too young to see it, but I had to see it at some point. It's one of the most rewatchable movies. It kind of originated the college bro film that Old School kind of came out of, Neighbors kind of came out of, and I think it's, you know, seminal in that way. And also just having Belushi as Bluto is just, you know, just a memorable character and something that teaches college kids how to act the wrong way, but it provides a landmark for fraternity brothers who, you know, we were all in frats. You quote the toga chant at random moments, and people will be, you know, not wondering if you're, you know, a fan of, you know, the Roman Empire. They'll think, oh, this guy knows his, you know, 70s college films. So very important movie. You have to watch it at a, you know, in the right mindset, which is probably
the right amount of inebriation too.
Yeah, which is hungover and
subdued otherwise. Watch it hungover. That was the issue. I want to rewatch it. Just gotta find the right time. And for me, Dad, my number one.
What would your number one be?
Anchorman. Well, thanks for spoiling it. It is, in fact, Anchorman.
It's not Holmes and Watson?
It's not Holmes and Watson.
What about Get Hard?
No, it is Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy. I think this is a classic. As Jeremy, you're hinting at, this is what really catapulted Will Ferrell into the star comedy guy. Also as Chris Parnell, an SNL cast member. Also in the cast, you got Paul Rudd, Steve Carell, Christina Applegate. A lot of people deem this as one of the funniest, if not the funniest movies of the 2000s. I think that there is an unlimited quotable lines in this film and countless great scenes of whether it's kicking a dog off the bridge or cameos, very rewatchable for so many age groups at the point of release and watching it on home video. And then, you know, I, in the early 2010s, discovered it with my camp friends and we'd watch and quote it all the time. Consistently zany and random, very similar to Barb and Star in a certain way, in my opinion. I also love the sequel as well. I really enjoy the sequel. This one grossed $84.1 million domestically and $89.4 million worldwide. My number one top SNL cast member comedy, Anchorman.
So which rumble was a better rumble between the two?
The first one. I think the second one was a bit overblown with a bit too many cameos, even though it does have the ghost of Stonewall Jackson.
I'm blind!
I love Anchorman 2. I don't think it gets enough love, but the first one's a classic, so I'm going with the first Anchorman. Jeremy, did you see this at the time of release, or were you...
No, I wasn't allowed. I mean...
You were 12.
I was...
11.
I was not old enough to watch it with the rents, and Mom was not into those types of movies, so I never really got the opportunity to watch it in theaters. But, you know, Anchorman is like Animal House, for a certain generation, the most quotable film of the 2000s. It includes nearly every important comedian.
Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller's in there. Paul Rudd is in there. David Koechner. Steve Carell. I mean, you can't tell the history of 21st century.
Who's David Koechner?
Champ Kind.
Oh, he's on
The Goldbergs.
Yeah.
You can't tell the story of, 21st century film comedy without Anchorman.
And I think it was like Will Ferrell does ad-lib so often, and a lot of that him and his contemporaries ad-lib, and I think this was one of the first maybe old school started where he just really, his ad-libbing, where everybody ad-libbed.
Well, this was directed by Adam McKay, who then did Step Brothers, Talladega Nights, and eventually more dramas of The Big Short and Vice, but it was produced by Judd Apatow. It was his first, big, important producing role, which was a good starter for the ad-libbing genre of comedy. So that might explain that element.
Mm. There is an entire cut, I believe, of Anchorman 2 that is completely, you can follow the same plot, but the actual dialogue is completely ad-libbed and different than
that
the one
true.
That was
released. I have it on Blu-ray. It's an R-rated 2.5-hour version where it's the same movie. Every single joke is different. But even with the first Anchorman, they filmed so much that they even have an entire different movie, Wake Up San Diego. That is, they filmed at the same time, and it follows the same structure, but it is about a group of robbers, bank robbers. It is so weird. It's not as funny as Anchorman, but it's weird that they filmed both of them at the same time. So that's just a fun fact if anyone did not know that about Anchorman.
Do you want to give a quick blurb to Barb and Star, what you thought of it
before we head out?
I thought Josh kind of hinted at it. It has the same absurd energy as Anchorman with cutaways that you don't expect. The fact that it's two female leads is, I guess, different than what, the SNL film is used to. But it has a very, contagious energy. The fact that Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo have... I said her name right.
Yeah, you got on the first try. It took me a couple tries.
Have the type of chemistry that they have had for from years of working together really shows off in the movie. It might have been a little too silly to my liking and a little too technicolor, but I think it's a great entry and worth the $20 that we spent watching it and renting it at home.
But Dad, thank you so much for joining me on this episode as always, and Jeremy, thanks for stepping in. What'd you think of your first pseudo guest star on the show?
I could have used a stool or a glass of water or something.
Yeah, you're just standing here with nothing. We're sorry about that.
That's
we'll
okay.
Treat you better next time.
He took the other stool for his computer.
Dad, once again, thank you so much as always for joining me. And audiences, if you don't know, and if you're enjoying the show, you can actually support us by going to anchor.fm/Joshua-Bergman/support. You can donate $10, $5, or just $1 a month. We did spend $20 on the show, so if you really appreciated this Barb and Star episode, then in a way you could kind of be giving it back. Dad, any last words, any last remarks?
No, I'm looking forward to the next Mr. Movie where we get into some of the Oscar contenders.
That is true, but I do have some guest appearances coming up, so we're going to be taking a small break before the Oscars.
Okay, very
cool. The Golden Globes is this weekend, and I'm excited.
Yes, I'm looking forward to see how they're doing since Amy and Tina are on different coasts.
All virtual, not even together, but as we said, we like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, great SNL cast members. So, Dad, once again, thank you so much for joining me. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me. And audiences, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next time.